Welcome again. It's the With Onion Soccer Podcast. Happy to be back at you with episode 7. I'm here again with our good friend Karin at ChuckTheSpear87. I am Michael White, Michael L. White on Twitter. You can always check our show notes at withonions.com. We are here today to talk about the penultimate games before the Olympic round of games gets started. We'll check in the last week in NWSL, how things fared while the Thorns were out. Talk about the most recent WNBA protests again and how they compare to what the national team has, or more closely to say, has not been doing lately. Other random musings that may come up. Karin, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So last week with the NWSL, I have it written here in a note, fortune favored the Thorns. Sure did end up working out that way, with pretty much exactly what you kind of wanted to keep them at or near the top of the table. Still top on goal difference. Kansas City beating the Flash. Sky Blue holding on and actually being the better team the entire game there against the Spirit. I don't know what the hell happened with the rain to get where they got there.
Yeah, I think that game surprised me more than anything else. I really thought that Seattle was going to come out and... Well, I guess, yeah, Seattle, after their last game, they scored.
Yeah, that's the best way of putting it.
they didn't stop. Orlando has struggled away from home this year, so that part wasn't surprising. But
absolutely.
After what Seattle had shown against Western New York in a game, I thought they were going to be extremely motivated and really come out to make a statement. I guess they made that statement just a week late.
That's the truth, yeah. Sky Blue, pretty damn good game. Spirit never really looked capable of putting anything up there. The one thing that surprised me the whole time was Leah Galton's scoring. I can't remember the blonde right back for the Spirit, but she's kind of like idly jogging while Galton's taking her run the whole time. She finally, and then at the very end, she starts to charge in and actually put something on her, but she has already sealed out, and then, you know, top shelf goal.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
I did like to see Nicole Barnhart showing that she is still a top goalkeeper in... I mean, still, really, she's one of the best in the world.
Absolutely.
14 saves against Western New York. So you can strongly argue she is the reason that they Kansas City managed to win that game.
Yeah, and they're still not out of it. I mean, without her and Groom, that team is worse than Boston, or as bad as Boston, I could argue, if I thought about it or put the stats to it.
Well, it definitely shows that in soccer, if you have a fantastic goalkeeper, it can forgive a lot of ills.
Oh, shit, yeah.
I mean, they can't do everything, but there will be those games that everything works for them, and it can make up for a porous defense and a lack of offense. If you get
yes.
that one break, you can win 1-0.
Absolutely.
It's one of the wonderful and horrible things about soccer, depending on which side of the game you are on.
Yeah. You could probably say the Flash put up like a Tim Berzian effort, because a lot of the games last year, those men in green were, you know, putting up the 20 shot games and having literally nothing good to show of it. Maybe a draw, a solitary goal, maybe none.
The one difference I would say is that in those games, yes, the Timbers put up 20 shots, but maybe 6 of them were on goal.
Yeah, that's very
for
true.
For Barnhart to make 14 saves, that means 14 shots on goal.
Yeah, or in the general vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
Sounders could learn a little bit from the Flash after their game last week. I'm not going to...
Oh.
Damn it, I'm not going to spend too much time on the MLS, for fuck's sake.
I laughed that entire game. It was hilarious.
Yeah. I guess I'll go into one thing. The pass back that leads to the goal, it's a terrible pass back from, the right back to the center back, it looks like.
Yeah.
But there was enough time for the guy receiving the ball to charge at it a little bit, and then he could have fired a clearance 30 yards downfield. He just gives up on it, points his hand at it after it's been stolen by Dwyer. It's like, yeah, man, you fucked me. That's like, it's the same damn thing as when you throw like a soft pass back across the field at midfield and someone intercepts mm-hmm. it because you don't run to it. Just get to it. Get to it, clear it, and then yell at your guy. Don't yell at your guy after the goal has happened.
Absolutely.
And don't be a soccer douchebag. One thing I thought about a lot with the Flash being really good, and it's kind of on the mundane scene, but I call it how the Flash Billy Beane the offseason. Billy Beane being the longtime baseball general manager for the Oakland A's, where if you don't have the pull, like I would say with the exception of maybe Boston and Sky Blue, the Flash anymore, especially after the Carly Lloyd fallout, isn't really a place where the big names, the internationals, are going to look first. Henri was never probably thinking about going to the Flash at any point.
I would be very surprised if she would have even considered accepting
that. Ain't going to Rochester. So, like, in the way that Billy Bean is, you kind of have to make your quality on the roster in certain weird ways. I was really interested in noticing when I was trying to break down why the hell the Flash didn't look like shit this year, was the way they kind of repeatedly would move assets. Like, I completely had forgotten that Moros came to them in November, but was sent out not long after the draft on January 29th. Getting additional picks, getting additional second, first round picks, whether it's that trade or the Engen trade to Chicago to get a first rounder. And that's where they got Abby Ursay, who's already scored 2 goals in 3 games for them right off the bat, getting Adriana Leon. Or even I think the best one is probably the Frisbee trade, which I talked about you before we started recording. You get a person that gets waived midseason. You trade away someone who gets waived by the team you trade them to. You get 2 years of international slot. You swap that slot along with a second-round pick that you probably got from the Engen trade. You trade assets for 2 trades to get who is now your third or fourth best attacking option in Sanderson in midseason. Or repeatedly getting additional international slots and second-round picks for 2017 in the LaRue-McDonald swap. Of course, who knows? Maybe LaRue comes back harder than ever and actually looks decent next year, and then it's kind of an even trade. But right now, that looks like shit, obviously.
Yes, that definitely seems like a case of, well, LaRue playing a hand to get out and then screwing her current team over.
Shit, yeah.
We were talking a little bit earlier about the influence the players have for these trades, which in the NWSL is considerably stronger than in really any other league.
Yes.
I mean, Sanderson asked to be traded. I think it was more away from Orlando because she wanted a situation where she was going to consistently play more. Mm-hmm. Talked about Morris. She did not want to play for Western New York. So
at the time, who could have blamed her?
Told she was probably going to retire if she didn't get traded.
Yeah.
So that was a situation where they were able to get something instead of nothing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that part. If you want to get traded, you will get traded in this league. Mm-hmm. But in other professional sports leagues, I don't feel there is that loss of asset value because the request was put in.
Right. Well, I think that in other leagues, there's only a few players that if they make the claim that they're going to retire or just stop playing altogether, that the teams actually think that it has teeth to it. Yeah. The NWSL, we just had a player retire this week.
Mm-hmm. Is that someone left for med school in the fall? Is that one?
Yeah, I think that was, yeah. But there have been 2 or 3 retirements this season after 10 or 15 total so far in the league from players who are between 25 and 28 years old just going on for an opportunity to make money.
Yeah, we had in the Christy Holly article that Laletta did, there was Sky Blue had 2 sellouts before they could make their first move of the year. You don't see many leagues where it's like, I'm going to hold this out. The only real notable exception I can think of is Diana Taurasi, but that was a don't play here because we're paying you 4 times as much sit out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why when the players say they're going to retire if they don't get traded or something like that, the teams have to believe them because that is what is happening in the league.
Yes, there is enough precedent to allow that threat to be usable. Absolutely. Obviously, with what the Flash did, took what little assets they did and made something good out of it. They're still a young team. They still have picks for next year. Do you think they'll hold on for top 4 finish?
I think they have a good chance to. I mean, they're a team that's going to be together for this whole time. They don't have to worry so much during the Olympic break as other teams do, and then coming back they're not the ones that are sitting there wringing their hands over whether or not they're going to be losing players for a victory tour.
Absolutely.
So they have their team. I mean, there's a couple players that could come back and make them better, mm-hmm. but they're not players that, you know, they're not, it's not their season depending on them, like a few other teams.
Like, Portland.
Yeah.
I don't, it's been shit the past couple weeks. I think we were fortunate going into July that they still were on a winning cusp, so it seemed like, oh yeah, we'll keep that home field advantage for the semifinals going. But now the table's fucking tied.
Yeah, I think, you know, we won that first game when we were missing the U.S. internationals, and so people are like, oh hey, maybe it's going to be okay, kind of ignoring the fact that Amandine Henry was still there.
Yeah, she's still plugging her heads on
you
balls and controlling
one of the best players in the world still playing for your team. That makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
You lose that one, and you have a really hard time keeping up the same level.
Yeah, our really good midfield turns into a really subpar midfield. Like
it goes.
That.
It turns into a who's starting today?
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what sort of lineup they're going to put out on the field
mm-hmm.
next
I
game.
I don't know what they're going to do. Like, what was it, the other game? They play 4-3-3 and... I was trying to figure out, is Shim on the wing? Is Shim playing holding? Is she too short to play holding? I'm confused. Everything is awful.
I mean, I kind of feel Shim's almost been playing as that number 10 that we were discussing it a little bit. Kind of that internal playmaker, because she's one of the only players with experience.
Yeah, going forward and putting
forward
ball in
and,
net. Yeah,
yeah, playing. Hopefully they'll have Brynna's daughter back.
Yeah.
She'll make a big difference. Give them, what, 4 or 5 legitimate professional players with experience on the field?
Yeah. Yeah. You could argue a lot of ways, but like the back line looked dumb when Skogerbo, or however I'm impronouncely pronouncing her. Once she was on playing left back against Houston, everything kind of looked fucked up back there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, great, our one asset with nobody around becomes negated, essentially.
Hopefully having the bye week will have gotten Kat Williamson up to speed and healthy so she can actually play more than 43 minutes or whatever it ended up being in the last game.
He's obviously comfortable having her on the right side rather than centrally where she was in her initial stint here, but I wonder in a situation of fitness like that, like it wouldn't have been better to have her slight immobility playing centrally with Emily rather than being on the wing.
I'm torn on that because I think it, probably the stronger thought process is that you keep your center back pairing for the whole game, if at all possible. So that could be why they had Reynolds playing in the middle. If they knew that Kat could go 90, then maybe you put her in the middle because she has played there with Emily before.
Yeah.
And Reynolds has played just fine out wide. I think
mm-hmm.
that would be what I would prefer, but if you aren't certain that Williamson can actually go 90, I can understand why you would have her on the outside, because it doesn't disrupt as much to switch out an outside back as it does to switch out a center back.
In some ways, the point is moot, because that last going the distance goal by Ojai in the 80-somethingth minute was long after Kat was gone. But that, so that could have been... Who had been playing there at that time? Was Lofton playing on that side?
Yeah, I think she's the one who subbed in and looked just lost most of the time.
Yeah, her only positive in that game was her wonderful blonde streaks through the hair. That's all I can. That's the only positive I can come up with.
I mean, those players are put in such a difficult position.
Yeah.
Training with the team, yes, but not having experience at the speed the games are, and then being expected to play up to the same level as these players with like international experience and such. And so, no matter what, we're going to be sitting here talking about that you weren't the same as Megan Klingenberg.
Yeah, you're talking about Lofton in a literal replacement player position playing against a should receive national caps sooner mm-hmm. or later attacker. It's like, it's not her fault.
It would be interesting. I don't know how they would work it for soccer exactly, but to look at like wins against replacement player stuff for soccer to see what the number would be for the roster that the Thorns are currently putting out compared to what they would have with their full squad.
Oh yeah.
Because
I would love to see metrics that I would love to see a metric that isolated what the midfield and attackers should be putting forward in goals expected versus,
mm-hmm.
you know, from what we were doing in June versus what we're doing in late July or something like that.
I mean, I kind of feel like you almost could actually just use what you're getting from the current Thorn season to make those calculations.
Yeah.
We had the players and now we have their replacements. So what is their wins versus?
Yeah.
And yeah,
national team, neutral winning percentage or shots on goal percentage.
Yeah. Though there's more than two tiers in the NWSL. Yes, you have your top national team players, but there are the full professionals and then there's the amateurs.
Yeah, there's the people that have been bouncing around camps for 2 years or something.
And sometimes there's players that are just out of college and they don't get a roster spot because there aren't any roster spots to go around with only 20 per team.
Yeah.
But, you know, they just don't have a chance really at being at the same level.
Absolutely. That kind of the draft is a long enough period where you can add assets if you keep all your picks, but between the roster size squinching and the salary cap, it is not a really great system for actual team development.
No, because with the draft, you know, as in with a lot of sports, it often takes a couple of years for those players to truly pan out. And when you don't have a roster that's big enough to just store them, you can't sign anybody that you aren't certain that you're going to be starting now.
Exactly.
Or at least is going to be first off the bench. That's you're looking for now. You can't look towards the future a whole lot when you have such a small roster.
Yeah. Small roster, small salary cap, infancy, so there's no development system. You'd like to see it where, you know, you see you have like six or seven perpetually undressed people that are only seeing scrimmage and reps and practice and not having to worry about being emergency starters if it's that month of that year.
Absolutely.
Like 2015, 16, like 2019 and 20 will look like.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Well, I think with, you know, this situation being the reality, it makes what the Flash have been doing this season even more impressive, because if you look at their roster, they're not only set up to do pretty well this year, he's actually looking pretty good for the future as well.
Yeah.
They are not a team with a bunch of aging players. They've got a lot of youth and players that, should they be able to keep them, that they could be a strong team for quite a while.
Absolutely. I think, McDonald's might be turning 30 at some point this year. She might be 29. I can't remember.
Something
about the oldest flaring attacker.
Yeah.
Ekstrom will probably be the keeper of the future, just drafted this year. Williams is 24 or 5. She's at 7 goals on the year. She's had a fantastic year.
Yeah, Sanderson, who they just acquired, is only 28.
Shit, yeah.
And she's a top international player, so they're set up pretty well.
Mm-hmm. One interesting thing looking through the entire offseason that the Flash did is, 4 or 5 months before they trade for Sanderson, they waived her girlfriend in Nick. I thought that was kind of hilarious. Like, I could have just held out.
Well, I don't think she's playing anywhere right now, so...
Yeah, I don't know if she's on a roster.
Oh, she is actually on Sky Blue.
Oh, okay. That's close then, at least.
I think that might have been one of the reasons that Sanderson was not unhappy to go to Western New York.
Yeah, not a bad commute, right?
It's a little bit closer from Orlando.
Not a bad commute, like, distance-wise. If you're, like, if you're a native New Yorker, you probably think bouncing between Rochester and New Jersey is, like, the worst thing in the world. Next up, we talked about it in the last podcast, you and I, WNBA. So they continue those protests. They get to the point of the suspension is going to come out, but then WNBA commissioner goes into effect saying that they respect and appreciate what the players are doing. And even leading up to the Olympics, they decided to finally rescind the quote unquote recently imposed fines, which I thought was utterly fantastic, of course.
I think so too. I thought it was a very interesting move that screams PR.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's the right move. But if it wasn't for so much pressure and the potential hypocrisy with the way the NBA had handled similar protests with its players, it might not have happened.
True. trying to think of all of them, but NBA, like they had the hoodie situation with Trayvon Martin, other Can't Breathe t-shirts and what
with Eric Gardner, yeah. The one difference I do believe with that the league could have stood on is after the NBA players wore the I Can't Breathe t-shirts, the NBA sent out a memo to everyone reminding them of the uniform guidelines, including warm-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no more protests of that manner.
True.
The WNBA sent out a similar thing after the Lynx had worn their t-shirts, and then there were subsequent teams wearing things other than their official issued team warm-ups.
Yeah, that's...
And so that was their initial justification for the fines that were issued. So they did have the right and to do so.
Yeah, but you don't want to equate yourself to, you know, NFL, where you can get a $32,000 fine for not wearing the top socks right below your...
Yeah.
And if you're not a league that is as tyrannical and authoritarian as that, it's with when you're finally in the news for positive reasons, being the best sports protest since Tommy Smith and John Carlos in the 68 Olympics, you don't really want to rain on that parade.
Uniform guidelines is definitely not something you want to follow in the NFL's footsteps. I mean, players getting fined for what's in their eye black when you can't even see it, and it's just like the one guy honoring his father.
Yeah.
And I remember like D'Angelo Williams not being allowed to wear pink outside of October. He wanted to honor his mother who had breast cancer. Yeah. And the NFL told him no.
No, we're only in it for the 1 month of trying to pander to women's sports people.
Yeah, so optics for that, do not follow the NFL.
Yeah.
So the WNBA did well on that.
Yeah, and it's just so beautiful how well it was organized. The players don't talk about basketball in the press conferences. They only want to talk about the issues. It's so cool, and it's such a great dichotomy to the lack of strategy that McGinn Rapinoe et al. Are doing in the equal pay, equal play situation, where the I'll probably link to the audio release in the interview.
There was an article that came out right before the game in Chicago that you guys were going to wear the equal pay, equal play, and then nobody did. Can you tell us what changed in between?
Yeah, I think that there's certain times where we're actually required to wear certain gear. And so we're trying to respect that, and we're trying to kind of do both at the same time. And I think on our social media and kind of around, there's certain times that we can sort of stand out, and then there's certain times that we need to do our job and kind of fall in line in that way. So that's kind of what that was about.
As an athlete, your commodity, what people are interested in you is not necessarily your words, if your play doesn't create something that they want to see. Your time is on that field, and if you can't protest during the action of trying to nutmeg someone, you probably ought to try to do it before the game or after the game. And they are kind of absconding from that opportunity.
Yeah, I think you mentioned briefly how the WNBA players actually told reporters that they weren't going to talk basketball in their press conference, so only ask them questions about the social justice issues. And that's in complete contrast to the women's soccer players who have this big issue that they want everyone to be behind them with, and yet, when do you hear about it? They're not taking every opportunity that they can to talk about it. They declined to wear shirts after they said they were going to because they needed to fall in line.
Yeah.
Which seems to be completely contrary to the message and the point that they're trying to make.
Yeah. Why are you saying that you have to fall in line? That quote, three-word quote, in any context is borderline reprehensible towards the goals of social feminist progress and...
I mean, isn't that the problem that you're fighting? That for so long, all you've done is fall in line?
Yeah.
Just done what you're supposed to do. That's what that means. Are you unaware of that aspect of it?
Yeah. I get it. There are fine lines everywhere. But you can say that social media creates a new avenue to talk about it relentlessly and consistently. But everyone says things on Twitter. Everyone has an account. all accounts aren't obviously created equal based on followership and whatnot, but if you're not peppering the vast media landscape with your message, if you're not wearing that shirt, talking about it, and then nailing it down at home in social media, then you're not getting the outlet to everybody of what you're saying. You're not putting the onus on Gelati to be scared in his soccer boots to make any changes.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a lot of like the ESPN shows, and I feel like that gives, when you're watching things like Around the Horn and Pardon the Interruption, if there are topics on that, that lets you know those are the big topics in sport. They've been talking about the WNBA. They talked about the equal pay thing for the women's soccer when it initially came out. But I haven't seen anything on any of those sports shows other than on the bottom line reading that the U.S. does not have the right to strike.
Yeah.
That's the last I heard about it.
Yeah, even trying, because I hadn't, the audio I pulled, I'd only heard about it referenced in tweets. And when I was trying to search, I'd search like Rapinoe protest, national team protest, Rapinoe equal pay. There's the big gap from July 7th when the articles ran in most news presses. Mm-hmm. There are also the March articles, obviously, from the initial suit. But between July 2nd and July 22nd/26th, there's shit. Nothing.
Did they even put out like a full statement after that ruling was against them?
I don't believe so, because I'm pretty sure I fought, because I was well after the fact realizing that that
died. That seems so contrary to what you're trying to accomplish here. You want your side to be in the news, and you don't want people's ending message to be, oh, well, they don't have the right to do this. It's over.
Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like. It feels like it's over.
Even if they made it a, even if the lawyers or something or USSF made it a Friday news dump, you want to have, it's almost cliche these days because it always happens, especially in NWSL. The cuts dump on Friday, but hey, we're recording on Friday too. How about that? Then come out with a statement that you can all stand behind and maybe all retweet and get out there for everyone else to spread, because then you are the outlet to the message. You are creating the PR in the situation.
Exactly. Something as simple as saying that we are disappointed with this outcome. We are going to continue in our fight for equal pay for what we're going for here. It can be three sentences.
Yeah.
But something that goes out that, yeah, everybody tweets. All of the players that are involved in it. And hopefully more than just the ones who are actually named. But at least, like, those six players or however many it was. Something so that, yeah, that message keeps out and that you control the message.
Yeah.
I think that's where they're starting to lose it. U.S. soccer has the control of the message right now.
That is the best way of saying it, yeah. Because they have given up their opportunity to control it and to demand it be in everyone's thoughts and in everyone's pictures and whatnot.
Yeah.
If they're rolling into Rio right off the plane and right into the stadium with those shirts on, and with quotes backing it up on social media or in audio and video form, then they're in control of the message and they're forcing USF to think about it.
Yeah, right now, if the players have to react, and you want it to be the other way around. You want to be the one who is setting the tone, making the other party respond to what you're doing. And the players, well, they are in the mode of having to react, but it doesn't seem as if they are.
It's like they're waiting for the perfect opportunity that may or may not present itself. Maybe they're waiting to rip off the shirt after a knockout stage goal. Maybe they're waiting for a victory tour. But the basis of what I'm trying to say is that shit might not happen. That opportunity may not come. You might as well just be using the ones you have presently.
Yeah, you can never wait for that perfect moment because there's no guarantee that you're actually going to get it.
Exactly.
And how do you know what the perfect moment is?
Yeah. If the perfect moment may be something that so shocks your system that you're not even thinking about the strategic option to use it, for fuck's sake.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I score. Oh, Megan Rapinoe scored a 50-yard strike from the left wing. She forgot to take off her jersey and show the shirt underneath. Whoops, guess we'll have to wait for the next one.
Right, yeah. Oh, forgot to wear the shirt today.
Yeah, even worse.
And shit, it's like,
I was digging through shit on my computer, old pictures, and they have a FC Köln in Bundesliga last year. A guy had written, "I can't breathe" on his shirt underneath. It's like, mm-hmm. you're in Western, Southwest Germany, referencing, you know, something about African Americans, some of them partially of your heritage being a Nigerian. It's like, he's not the spokesman that we would think to be keeping that in the mind. We'd want a LeBron James or some other American sports guy, but he did it, and we talked about it, and we thought about it. So someone probably needs to be doing something like that.
Completely agree. I think that there's been a really large missed opportunity to keep the issue in the public consciousness. Especially, there's a lot of things going on right now that they could use to tie into.
Yeah.
On the equality and for women's rights and things like that. First female presidential nominee.
Absolutely.
It's a perfect opportunity to kind of tie into, this should be equal.
Yeah.
And
even little subtle shit like
crickets.
Yeah, little subtle shit like you wearing the shirt, taking a selfie, and the DNC speech is behind you. Little shit like that. That you're not saying, but it just doesn't come up. Of course, I don't know. That kind of always goes back to my athletes are terrible at Twitter idea.
There's a lot, especially when they're the ones controlling it, and that's not their job to tweet inspiring or interesting or funny things. They don't.
Nope. Usually they're retweeting bad early morning motivational quotes.
Or whatever their sponsor has paid them to tweet.
Yeah. I still see... I don't follow hardly any major athletes with major sponsorships, but I still occasionally like want to be self-angry, go through Morgan's Twitter feed, and it's like, oh, this is definitely an ad, and she doesn't put the hashtag ad, even though everyone's been talking about this for a year and a half now, that you need to fucking do it.
I can't remember the last thing she tweeted that wasn't an ad.
That's pretty much that, yeah.
Unless she might have actually retweeted, I think, Ali Long's picture for heading to Rio.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's about the last one that wasn't an ad.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I don't look through the feed often, but ones I see are ads.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a difference for Morgan that if she puts ad at the end of a Ritz Crackers tweet that she loses like $5,000 or something like that. It's like, I have no idea. Or she's trying to be illegal, because if someone actually brought a suit up against her, she's probably going to have to delete a lot of tweets.
I feel like for the things like that, it kind of seems like she actually is probably mostly in control of her Twitter feed and just isn't so aware.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the ideas with athletes and other public figures on Twitter was you're supposed to help you get more of a real-time glimpse into their lives. Kind of connect a little bit. And you don't get that if they're just peppering you with ads.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Alex Morgan here has 2.4 million followers on Twitter. So we talk about the capital to get a message out. She's got it. But yeah, some of these athletes, they do have a platform that they could potentially do more, at least to consistently get the message out. Because I know for me, I follow a lot of people on Twitter, and there's very few people that I'll actually go look in their timeline. So if I'm going to see their tweets, it needs to come through fairly regularly on a subject, because yes. I'm just looking through my timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect there's a lot of people who do that. You know, if there's like a thread that you see that seems like it might have be interesting, or you see that it is a message in a sequence, then you go look at that person's whole timeline there. But otherwise, if I'm going to see something about equal pay from a lot of these players, because I follow all of the ones who are named in the website and the lawsuit, but if they're not actually consistently tweeting about it, I feel like the message is going to be lost.
Yeah. It's in case you missed it kind of situation where if they are saying it just once, it might not be enough, because the Twitter apps by themselves are not conducive to seeing something 6 hours ago or from your work day or something and going back and seeing it and noticing it.
Right, which is actually one of the reasons I like Twitter. I don't like that whole you missed the section like that they have kind of started trying to be more like Facebook.
Yeah, it's annoying getting that alert. I have a third party as well, which I use because I like it, because it's easier to pull like 6 hours and then kind of scroll through it because I don't have a ton of people I follow. But even then, it's kind of for me based on when I know things are happening. Like, it's like, okay, it's 9 a.m. I've probably missed a couple of barely talked about NWSL trades or something. Or nothing worse than going in and seeing a subtweet about an acquisition. And I'm not going to say who these people are that subtweet too much to where they won't link an article. But it's like, okay, now I got to go digging. And digging for me eventually leads to terrible dumpster diving and really bad hot takes.
That's how I found out about the McCaffrey trade.
Yeah.
So some random subtweet about it. And I was like, wait, what happened with Stephanie McCaffrey?
Yep.
And then had to sit there and search and eventually found out. But
yeah. And especially with that stuff not being the whole, not going to get into the whole, it's really hard to find shit outside of social media and WSL acquisitions wise. But yeah, if you can't find the article or can't find the tweet and you want to go into Google and hope that Google News helps you out, you're boned. I mean, you're going to get something from May mentioning McCaffrey getting her one goal of the year or something like that.
She doesn't have any goals this year.
That is true. I forgot about that.
Thank I was going to say, you're going to get something from her last national
one game. Shot on goal. Yeah. Like a similar vein, Kelly Conheney scored a gorgeous back heel goal that was the game winner in the opening match against the Reign for Sky Blue. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Kelly Conheney, I don't know much about her. And in Google News, I got something from ESPNW from 2013 about her coming back from injuries at VaTech.
I think I read that article.
Yeah.
I probably did the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, holy shit. Okay. Obviously, you can say it two ways. You can say ESPNW has a really good way of search engine optimization. Or you can say, holy shit, why isn't anyone writing anything that works in Google?
Yeah, that's true. It's so difficult to find current information.
Yeah.
Even when there is stuff to find.
Mm-hmm. One thing that is also irritating me lately is there seems to be a lot of turnover in sports writing and on the internet, especially in women's sports, especially with everyone that Excel is pulling away. So many of Equalizer's articles are not just Equalizer staff. It's like, who are these staff? I don't care if they're your peon intern. If they're writing the whole article and it's a decent article and I finished it and it has pertinent information, why don't you say that person's name? Because maybe me knowing them and them becoming more prominent means I have another access to source information.
Right. You know, I like having the names, and especially when they include like their Twitter handle and things like that, because if you're writing a good article, there's a chance that you're going to be tweeting other information that I want to follow that will also bring me to your articles.
Yeah. And we were talking beforehand about Lola's Lowdown, talking about the Christy Holly thing and everything. I know about him through his work on Equalizer, and of course he does the color commentary for Sky Blue Games. But if I become a lazy, stagnant fan and I'm only looking at that website to find his stuff, he could be gone in a year. And then they're out of one of their good writers, and theoretically a lot of fans would lose that information permanently. Maybe not knowing the source of said information.
Yeah, I think having more information more broadly available is never a bad thing.
No.
I mean, even though it is all the bad stuff for the NWSL that is most broadly available, there's a reason there's the phrase, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Absolutely.
We might get annoyed at it sometimes, but if you don't get the bad publicity, you might never get the good.
Yeah, and Follow Friday is definitely a dead trend, and for the most part, thank God, on Twitter. But I kind of think that I could probably use a good Follow Friday from some of the few soccer writers I do currently pay attention to and notice.
That's actually something I would love, because every time I find a new soccer writer who's writing something, then I try and follow him, but it's hard to find sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know who's writing this stuff, who's actually paying attention, who might have access to the players and teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if every team could do some, like, put out some sort of list where here are the people that have the credentials that we're going that actually can get in, or something along those lines.
That would be a great place to start. You can fill obviously too much, but you could start to filter, you know, guess and check. It's like, okay, that Boston beat writer pays a lot of attention, that person seems to show up enough on Twitter to make it worth my follow.
Or yes, some sort of list where we could actually start figuring out who is going to provide consistent information.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
I mean, I think all of us who pay enough attention, we have a list probably at this point of between 10 and 20 people that give us something.
Mm-hmm.
But we know there's more out there that you might be missing something. Someone who actually does have some breaking news.
Yeah.
That maybe knows about the trades and things that are happening before the 5 p.m. Friday news dump.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe social media and NWSL becomes meta enough, we can have a BuzzFeed style 35 prominent writers who subtweet too much so you can't figure out what their articles are that they're talking about.
Oh.
a boy can dream. Well, we are coming up, see, tomorrow now, or probably today for the people that are listening to this recording if they get it on day one. Thorns versus Rain coming up Saturday, last game for this, for our portion of the schedule. Long drawn pause. Do we have any chance of getting at least a point?
I think it depends on A, which Thorns team shows up, and B, which Seattle team shows up.
Holy shit, yeah.
You know, the Thorns will be should have a slightly stronger team than they did at Houston.
Mm-hmm. Bring your daughter by yourself. Hopefully a more, at least 60-minute fit Cat.
Yeah, having the week off, I think, certainly helps the Thorns. That was a much-needed break for their current roster situation. But as we saw this past week, Seattle could certainly come down and score a boatload of goals.
Yeah, we could be in for something.
And they have been one of the most inconsistent teams so far this season. So you don't really know what you're getting with them, because even after they got Naho back, they still have struggled to score in a couple of games, which was somewhat unexpected.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a scary game.
Yeah. In my thoughts, I keep coming back to Seattle away. They were a lesser team. We were a better team. I think we were only out Tobin. And from my vantage point, they were isolating Winters a lot to not allow her to get the ball in advanced positions early. And I don't, if we are capable of doing that type of thing in a game like this one, that means we're selling out for 0-1 goals on our own end. And I'm not even sure we have the personnel to keep her and Fishlock and everybody busy that can destroy us.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we do. They just are not. The midfield without the national team players is one of the weakest points, and that is one of Seattle's strengths.
Yeah.
And if they run a rough shot over our midfield, we don't have a prayer in the game.
Yeah. In a more abstract situation, I would want to say, let's play a flat 4-4-2, have our midfielders run up, be box to box, run their brains out, and pretend to play and try to play as much defense as humanly possible while we can still technically maybe get a goal or two. But then obviously I have to get out of La La Land and think, who's the second striker on this roster? Do we throw Shim up there
at the expense of our midfield?
Exactly. Then we're fucked completely.
Yeah, that's the issue there. We have some players that could play up there, because we've even kind of thrown Brynnis daughter up a bit higher at times. But we saw against Houston that we desperately need someone else in the midfield.
Yeah.
So
we basically need her to clone herself maybe 2 to 3 times. Let's see here. Yeah, maybe 4 times, because play a 4-3-3, sorry, with her in 2 holdings and mm-hmm. a central box-to-box, and then maybe throw her in as a second striker or a winger or something.
Yeah, I think, you know, that would probably work out all right.
I like the height advantage, too.
Yeah. We should be great on set pieces.
And at least, I would say 3 Emilys would be good for the back line. Because I know she doesn't have the agility to play fullback and wingback all the time. But when she's mano-a-mano, she can do a pretty good step tackle. Standing tackle.
She can. I think I definitely would take 2 of her as the center back pairing. I really was never impressed with her on the outside. She just didn't seem comfortable and seemed to lack the awareness of when she needed to use her pace.
She yes.
got caught out
that
of
is
position
a very good
a
point.
Fair amount. And it's not that she's slow. She just didn't seem to know when she needed to go up and when to come back.
Yeah. And sometimes her a forward pass to initiate an attack playing out of the mm-hmm. back doesn't seem to work very well.
Right.
And she's had some pretty weird clearance passes in the last few weeks too, actually.
I think with two Emilys, Kat healthy hopefully, and with Reynolds still, I think that's a decent enough back line.
We could probably play three Nadims in the 4-3-3, two wingers and a center forward.
I don't know that we want three Nadims.
Is that too many? I'm not getting touches and getting frustrated and running around and attacking people.
And yeah. I like Rasso, what she's been doing.
Oh shit! Yeah.
So we definitely. I'd go for two Rassos, one on each wing.
Yeah. Could we splice? Can we take two Nadims and splice Rasso and Nadim?
But yeah, that energy moving up the field, and then have Shim helping out in the midfield with Brendan's daughter.
Yeah.
So we just need to.
While we're gene splicing, let's make Shim like 4 inches taller. I think that'd make her much more versatile in the midfield.
Be okay with that. This is what we are reduced to improve the Thorns roster while the Olympic players are away.
I should have saved this for a complete Olympic break podcast episode. Maybe I'll make my perfect starting 11 gene splice pool later on.
With obviously the stipulation you can only use players on the roster, or I guess you could put in the amateur players, but I haven't seen enough from them to make me want to take things from them.
You could probably take individual traits.
Yes, like, a couple players have some decent speed, but that's about all they seem to have at this point.
Yeah. So we could splice, like, Pratt's speed, Nadim's intensity. I don't know. Rasso's bow tie or a hair tie game would be pretty good. That'd be a decent little gene splice, I might say.
I do only want one ribbon on the field, because then I can just call her Ribbon and you know who I'm talking about.
We have was it Tiffany Weimer who used the basketball headband?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need that back too somehow. I know it looks really weird on most men's or women's head to be wearing a contrast white headband, but it was so much fun.
I think overall I'm in favor of any of those little things that help to differentiate players, especially when you're watching the streams and the quality isn't always the best, the picture isn't that clear, and if you're not sure what number they are, and they're, have dark hair and ponytails, or, dark blonde hair and ponytails. They all look basically the same from the back.
Yeah.
When you've got something like a headband or a ribbon, then you know who the player is.
Absolutely. Like, I assume it's a standard F equipment at the Flash, but as soon as Sanderson went there, and you're seeing a home game at Rhino or Salem Stadium, she was on the fucking field.
Absolutely. And I was having some trouble with a couple of games that they played together, like, Huron and Henri.
Oh yeah.
From the back.
Yep.
Look very similar.
Mm-hmm. It's like I don't want to bring. Sometimes I feel that way at the home games.
Yeah.
And it's like I really shouldn't. From our row, I need binoculars to figure out who the fuck these guys are if they're running sideways and shielding their numbers on their shorts or back.
Yeah.
I'm actually would be pro. Not very common in sleeved jerseys that aren't padded as fuck, but I love like Philadelphia Phillies on their home, or is it away kits? They actually have one sleeve with a number on it. I would love, because you don't really need we don't have enough arm sponsors. I would love soccer jerseys to have a number sleeve on one side. That would be fucking fantastic.
Yeah. I guess in the NWSL, I don't know that they have a whole lot on those, but in other leagues, you have things on the sleeve so that you couldn't, MLS has an American flag on one arm, and that's pretty common. There'll be other patches depending on what competition you're playing in or things like that. So, plus with the cut of the women's jerseys, the sleeves are not as long and makes it a little harder.
Or you have certain center backs that roll them up basketball style.
I actually consider that to be youth soccer style, and I used to, have the Velcro straps so that you could hold your sleeves rolled up, and you wouldn't risk them rolling down.
Yeah.
That was all the rage, when I was in sixth grade.
I don't blame you, especially, men or women, farmer's tan lines aren't cool.
No.
No.
And they had specialized straps that had, little soccer balls on them. sold them at soccer stores. I mean, everybody did it.
That's awesome. That's how specialized them are. They're actually a specific product special made for that. I figure we've gone completely into the absurd. We had some thoughts on English soccer, but I think we should just save those for another episode.
Yeah, once
the transfer situations come together.
Good idea. That probably during the break would be a good time to hit up that.
Other than that, thank you for joining me on this otherwise extremely hot Friday. Hopefully we will we'll be positively consoling each other after a point or three tomorrow. We'll see.
We can certainly hope.
Oh, hope is about all we have, yeah.
I mean, you know, there's always the possibility. Anything can happen in soccer. That's one of the reasons we love it.
Absolutely, yeah. Or hate it. I mean, you know.
Right. It, like I said earlier, it all depends on what side you're on.
Absolutely.
If you're on the side of the team that had 27 shots and didn't score, you hate it.
Yeah.
But if your team got two or one and you did,
yeah,
it's the best game in the world.
It is the best because you're literally taunting the other side for the entire week on Twitter.
Yep.
And Twitter is where you shall see us if you like. You can always follow Karin at ChuckDespear87, me at Michael L. White. Thanks again for listening. And hopefully you'll hear from us again as the Olympics get started. Thanks again.